Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Dr. Therese Fish, who is the Vice Dean of Clinical Services and Social Impact in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at Stellenbosch University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for allowing me to join you.
Dr. Fish, you have a very exciting portfolio, which I'm keen to unpack. Your career with Stellenbosch University has spanned more than two decades, I believe starting in 2002, and you've served as the Vice Dean of Clinical Services and Social Impact at the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at Stellenbosch University. Please, can you tell us a little bit more about how you got into this role and what the portfolio is all about?
So thank you very much. So I am in 1999. I've been working in the public sector for many years since I graduated as a doctor in 1986. And I thought I was a bit fed up with being a clinician and a manager within the health services. And I thought I needed to expand my managerial abilities. And so I enrolled for an MBA at the Stellenbosch Business School, which I did full time in 1999 and 2000. And at the end of my 2000 and 2001, apologies for that error, 2000 and 2001, I did my MBA. I cummed my degree, and the university then offered me what at that time they called an expansion post, which was posts that the university had set up to increase the number of people from the designated groups within the institution. And so I was offered a position at the business school, and I stayed there for 4 years. And then I was recruited to take up the position as vice dean at the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences in 2006. So my journey at the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences, in fact, started in 2006. So I was brought in into a new portfolio. We had restructured the faculty, and clinical services and social impact. They had a different name at the time, but was not a key part of the managerial structure of the faculty. And so I think, as you may know, our faculty trains health professionals, both at undergraduate and postgraduate level. And we have to partner with the public sector to train our students. And so we work closely with various health systems, and we can speak about that later if necessary. And so key to my appointment was to really strengthen the partnership between the public sector, the public health sector, and the university and our faculty. And then secondly, to consider the third leg of the university of social impact. Some universities call it community engagement. And so my responsibility is twofold, is to really look at how we straddle the intersection between health and higher education. And then secondly, how we as a university fulfill our mission of engagements with the communities we work with. And these communities could be our local communities, could be our business communities, could be our international communities. My portfolio specifically looks at how we engage with communities, both in the public sector, the private sector, and in the communities that we work with. So I think as a university, we really need to ensure that we're in the service of society. And so all we do is, whether we do research, teaching, or community engagement, is to ensure that our population has better lives. And so I think my portfolio, if I look at what is the vision of my portfolio, is really to ensure that we have graduates that are responsive to the needs of our country and our continent and beyond, and to ensure that those that teach our students and train them to be the best professionals that they can are aware of the roles that they fulfill. And so I think our engagement with the public sector provides that platform to ensure that the trainers are also aware of their role in society and how they improve the lives of both the graduates that are sort of the trainees that are training with them, as well as ensuring that the health services are well covered in terms of human resources.
It's a really multifaceted role. If I think about it, it's not just about kind of like the knowledge dissemination to students and ensuring that they become robust health practitioners, but it's that larger responsibility to society and that integrated node. And when you speak about the public healthcare sector specifically, it is a neglected space.
So I think across the world, we all want to achieve a universal access to health. I mean, that is our core responsibility as public servants, and I see myself as a public servant, to ensure that we provide healthcare. You shouldn't be only provided with healthcare if you can pay for it. And so I think part of what we need to do as a university is to ensure that we intersect between what the public health service and strengthening the public health service by ensuring that we do evidence-based research, that the clinicians that work within the system are trained and adequately trained to respond to a very complex health system. And I think we're very fortunate in our province that we have a very good partnership. I work in the Western Cape, and so the Western Cape government and our four universities, we have agreements. And so I've been very instrumental in actually driving the conclusion of agreements between the Western Cape government and the four universities, and specifically Stellenbosch University. And it's because of that partnership that we've been able to actually increase where we train our students. So when I trained as a doctor many moons ago, we really trained in big hospitals. I trained at UCT and we trained at Goedeskeer. Now we have what we call a distributed training platform where we actually train our students both in highly technical systems like Tygerberg Hospital, which is one of our big training facilities, but also across the Western Cape and is including into the Northern Cape. And so we've got a very specific strategy. If we think that 45% of our population stay in rural areas, then we need to make sure that we train our students to be comfortable to often work in resource-constrained environments, to work in remote environments. And so we, through various initiatives, started the first rural clinical school in South Africa, where we actually immerse our students within rural settings. So we've moved away from in the past when we had students going into communities for 4 weeks, as they we called it a bit like medical tourism. They came in, they saw the patients, oh, poor patients, and they left. Now we want to really immerse our students within settings so they can understand how rural people live, how people in poorer areas, in the urban areas live. And I have a very distinct memory of a student telling us that to be able to understand why patients don't take their tuberculosis treatment when they don't have water, he had a better sense because of the immersion of him in his training time in a poor rural setting.
Dr. Fish, you really highlighted a few things here. One, in terms of the fact that we don't all live in an urban environment, that 45% of the population is dispersed across in rural communities. And secondly, the reality of the types of services and facilities that are available to the public in those areas and the personnel, i.e. doctors or other healthcare professionals, of what it takes to work in those environments. And I have to commend you in terms of how you've managed to increase the number of different training sites across the spectrum so that we don't have medical tourism, that students are able to understand what it's like to work in resource-constrained environments. How, though, have you managed to make that so sustainable? Because I believe you've got over 100 active training sites at the moment.
So I think you will see the theme that will come through time and time again is around partnerships. And so one of the strategies of Stellenbosch University is purposeful and inclusive networks. And so we can never do this on our own. We married to the Department of Health. We can never divorce because then we wouldn't be able to train the next generation of students. And so we train in the public sector, in the social services sector and the education sector, depending on what discipline, what program we're training. And so I think for us, it is around being mindful of the primary goal of the partner. So the health services has to deliver health services, education, and social services have to do that. And we are, in fact, partnering with them to ensure that our students that graduate from Stellenbosch University understand the complexity of a person's life. When you're a person living in a community, you don't come in a silo. You come to the facility, and the students need to understand the social determinants of health, the environmental determinants of health. And so I think we worked very hard to develop those partnerships, but there has to be a reciprocity. And so we benefit. Because we can train our students and they benefit because our students keeps the clinicians on their toes. You know, our students are smart. They know they have lots of resources. And so I think there is a partnership. And we also, in terms of our knowledge dissemination, ensure that we practice evidence-based healthcare. And so we do the research, the services benefit from that research. And so I think it is around partnerships.
There's definitely mutual benefit in the way you're describing that on the reciprocity of the relationship. Do you see any plans of expanding this further, be it within the Western Cape environment or perhaps in other areas, different provinces or even different countries, if the model's working correctly?
Yeah, so I think we have to be committed to our country. And so I think if you and you are very aware of the some of the challenges in the health system across the country. So we have for many years a partnership with the Northern Cape, and we have a number of these sites are in fact in the Northern Cape, which does struggle in terms of recruiting students, graduates to and professionals to work in the Northern Cape. So the Northern Cape has been one of our areas because they also don't have a Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences in the Northern Cape. So in a sense, we don't train in the other provinces because we have 20 plus health sciences faculties in the country, and we all train in different systems. And so we also must be mindful of the other universities having to train in the other provinces.
Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned establishing the first rural clinic school. And I'm just really intrigued to understand a little bit more about how that came about and the impact that it has on the community it serves.
So we were mindful of the need for rural health services. And so in 2001, we established the Ukwande Center for Rural Health. And it took us 10 years to partner with the Department of Health to actually develop a campus in Worcester. And so we have a additional campus in our pool of campuses at Stellenbosch University, and we have a specific campus in Worcester, and that is what we call, we have a hub and spoke model. So Worcester is the sort of the hub of our rural clinical school. And then all our spokes are in many places, including Upington, including Sierras, Robertson. And so it really was the impetus for us to expand and immerse our students in rural settings. I mean, we would love to train our students from year one to the last year in a rural setting, but some of the logistics of that are a little bit difficult. And so students spend most of their senior years, or not all the students, some of the students spend their senior years. But I mean, we would not be able to do that if we didn't have commitment from the Department of Health. specifically the Western Cape government in terms of that partnership, and now our partnership with the Northern Cape in terms of how we actually expanded our rural training into the Northern Cape.
Fantastic example of how partnerships are beneficial and keep things in a sustainable way to continue going. You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and today we're talking to Dr. Therese Fish, who is the Vice Dean of Clinical Services and Social Impact in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at Stellenbosch University. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at WomanityTalk. Dr. Fish, you have had an interesting career from serving in medicine as a doctor, then going into the business school, and now focusing within the managerial space at the university. People are shaped by the actions of yesterday, and education seems to have played a prominent role in your personal development. We know you qualified as a medical doctor in the 1980s, which was a very challenging time period for South Africa. You also attained a diploma in community medicine. You hold an MBA and a DBA. Please tell us about some of the reasons why you decided to become a medical doctor.
So it is a bit of a comedy of errors. So I come from a mixed race family, and my father was a very brilliant man and never had the opportunity to go to university. I mean, that was just the time. And so he left school when he was finished standard 10 at the time, and really never had a tertiary education. So I'm a first generation university student. I only discovered that very recently, having conversations with my sisters. And so when I was in standard 7, one of my teachers said, I was at a commercial school, and one of my teachers said, "But no, but you have to go to a school that has maths and science." And at that time, I wanted to be a nurse. So I lost my mom when we were young. She had breast cancer, and I always thought I wanted to be a nurse. And so she said, "No, you have to be a doctor." And so I changed schools, and I finished matric in 1980. We didn't go to school because of the boycotts of 1980, but I still managed to get into medicine. And so I trained as a doctor at UCT. We never graduated because we were studying with a permit at the time. So we boycotted graduation, but we finished our training. And then I worked for many years in the deprived and worked in Crossroads in Khayelitsha for most of my career. And then I thought I really had a different role to play. I needed to be in a managerial position. And so that's when I decided to embark on my MBA. And so, in effect, I've come a full circle. I trained as a doctor. I worked as a doctor in deprived areas. I upskilled myself in terms of the managerial responsibility, and I was a manager in the health services for a number of years. And then I went back to school, and then I came as the vice dean in the education system. And so I think I've gone the full route. I've started as a doctor, and now I train the next generation of health professionals. So I think I've completed my full circle.
That's a real pay it forward scenario. One of the things that you mentioned, and I think it's so instrumental, is how a person or people in our lives can kind of like sow the seeds of future opportunities. And that often how we may be limited by our own perceptions and beliefs. And I don't mean this disparagingly to the nursing profession, but your teacher recognized that you had greater capabilities, and how someone believing in us can help us advance to really realize our full potential.
So, I mean, I think that's quite critical, we have thousands of aspirant health professionals who apply to come into our systems, and so in the apartheid times, I was one of 10% of the class who were people of color, and so we know we have the ability to achieve, and so I think it is around giving opportunities, and so I think we really have a difficult role. but a critical role, ensuring that we give people with potential the opportunity to become health professionals. And so in the old days, you know, it was based on quotas of who could get in. Now we still have to recognize that we have a responsibility around redress in this country. And so despite tomorrow we celebrate 30 years since we had our first election. And so I think we do have a role to ensure that we change the profile of professionals in the health services. And we do want it to reflect the demography of our country. It has to be that people can identify and say, wow, you know, there is a Black woman who is the head of that critical discipline or is the head of nursing. So I think it is the role that we do play to ensure that we drive equity, we drive opportunity specifically for women in the health services, women fill the nursing role. And often in still the hierarchy in the health system is that the nursing, which is critical, is still seen as often a subservient part of our system, but we cannot survive without nurses. And so we have to respect each discipline, but we have to make sure that every young woman knows that she has the potential to do, and young men also, but that they do have the potential to rise to the top. And I think that's part of what I see. I'm going to retire in the next few years. And so I need to make sure that we have systems in place that give every person the opportunity that they deserve.
And you are an educator, so staying with this thread and thought process, what are some of your views about education as being an equalizer and an enabler for women, and not just for, let's say, her self-fulfillment and an immediate job, but the benefits that her family are going to derive or future generations because of the education that she attains for herself today?
So, I mean, we know certainly from in the health sector that the importance of educating women. And so we know if we educate women, it will make a significant difference to the lives of children. And so we're not being dismissive of the role of men, because we also need children to see role models in men in their lives. But we know that if we train women, they will ensure that in those first 1,000 years, days of life that are so critical to the development of a child, that women play a critical role. And so if we educate the generation of women, not only to be nurturers, but also just to fulfill the role of examples and role models for young girls, I think it is absolutely, and if we had to do one intervention, we have to educate our women.
So true. And I hope that everyone listening on the show today recognizes that they've got these opportunities and they should be pursuing them. Dr. Fish, you wear a number of hats, but one of them as a core hat is in leadership. And being an effective leader does carry significant responsibility. How do you think that women occupying positions of leadership are able to influence younger women to take on more leadership roles, and also to overcome, let's say, some of the stereotypical thinking, which kind of, as we've just been talking now, which dictates the roles that women should or shouldn't occupy?
So I think women often have the difficult task of being respected for who we are. And so one of I've gone through many performance appraisals where people say, but you're a little bit too aggressive. And so I think it's a balance between assertiveness and aggression. And so I think when men speak out, they're considered to be assertive, and wow. But when women fulfill that same role, they're often considered as aggressive. And so I think it is around finding your voice and speaking your voice. And so I come from a family of eight siblings. We nine siblings, of which eight are women. And so we were nurtured to know our voices. I mean, we had a very sort of matriarchal kind of system in our family. And so I think it is helping young women to know their worth and to speak up. But often in the workplace, there's an expectation from you as a woman leader that you will only pursue the rights of women and looking after women. But I think we have such a key responsibility also to call out our male counterparts to actually recognize the difference that women bring into the workplace, the diversity of thought around practice. I mean, we constantly have to ask ourselves, do our work practices ensure that women can thrive? And so in a university where in the academic environment, you know, there's a tenure you go through and you get promoted up and up, and then women have to take time off to fulfill the role that society expects of them to raise their children. We have to stand back and say, but how does that influence? And are there different rules that we must play by in terms of ensuring that women actually fulfill the role and actually reach the same goals that their counterparts, despite some of the different roles that they had to play in terms of raising the next generation of young people and families? And so I think we do have to constantly remind the system that we do have those roles. And it's often not an easy role to play because people will say, oh, you're emotional and, you know, it's the kind of things that are really, really difficult. And despite us being in 2024, we have many, I mean, I've seen it. I'm quite shocked still when you see walking into meetings and you're the only woman. So we really need to change our sector, other sectors, to give women the kind of spaces that they could fulfill both their professional roles, but also their family roles and their personal other goals. So I think as women, we have to drive that agenda and ensure that we give people spaces.
Dr. Fish, you know, I've asked this question probably for the last 10 years now with our respective guests on trying to think about solutions. And in more recent conversations, one of the common themes has been around the system. So whether it is academia, whether it is business, it doesn't matter. But it's almost as though the systems of work were architected by men and have been continually fed the same type of individuals. And in order for the system to work, the people working in the system have to adopt the behavior of the system. So I'm wondering and putting this out there, if there is a way that women can help change the system so that the system suits them more.
I think that's a Nobel Prize question. I don't have the answer, because I think it is a really, really difficult question. Because, and I think if we see post-COVID what has happened, I mean, the role that women played in COVID is quite interesting, because they had to fulfill many roles, even additional roles. And so now come, and many women found it very useful to be in that space because they had flexibility. And now we go back to the inflexibility of a system, as you said, that was created in a time when we weren't part of that system. And so I do think it's that we have to purposefully and mindfully actually have those very, very difficult conversations. And I think it is around, often in business, it's around the bottom line. In our spaces, it's around getting the job done, you know, making sure that we can run our system in a university, in a health system. I mean, you have very specific targets in terms of students or patients you have to see. And I mean, I've been through many processes in health and higher education where we really can't come to a decision that will be inclusive of women. So we all talk about inclusivity in the workplace, but I think to actually do it so that young women, young mothers can breastfeed in the workplace, can have flexible hours in which they do their responsibilities. I don't have an answer for it, but I think we have to constantly, it's one of those things that you have to eat the elephant bit by bit. And hopefully in the years to come, as more women take up leadership positions, I think, we would like to see that they can help make the change that we want to see.
Yes, I know it's not an easy question, and there isn't a silver bullet answer. Can you tell us about some of the leadership strategies that you've found to be effective for you?
Yeah, so many years ago, I was participated in a course which was around lead beyond authority, and so for me, it's always often we have positional leadership, and I have got positional leadership in my job. I at many levels in the institution. I'm on the University Council of Stellenbosch University, so one has levels of position. But I think we also have the ability to lead beyond our authority that we have. And so we have to look at how we can do that within the workplace, in our neighborhoods, because we are all leaders. And so I think we have to nurture in our children, in our young students, in our colleagues, especially our younger colleagues, that they actually can be leaders. They may not have a title of leaders. And so I think one of the things that I always try to do is to ensure that people know that they can be a leader, even if they are my subordinates. And we learn from each other.
I'm
We
smiling
have to.
because when I was setting up this interview, your team are so empowered that they have taken that ethos of leadership in their own space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, I think there are many pockets of excellence in all institutions. And so, we have fantastic leaders in our system. Many of our clinicians are taking up the roles, and I've seen some of the colleagues you've interviewed. And so I think we are taking up that. And even our students, we've got fantastic students. I see them, I sit on the university council, and they may be students, but they know they have a voice and they can challenge us as an institution. And so I think we have to nurture leadership from young kids throughout the system. And so I do that. I think we have to lead with respect. We have to be committed to social justice. One of my favorite people is Pope Francis, who's led the Catholic Church in very different ways. And he wrote a book by Lead with Humility. And I think we have to lead with humility. And he's got some very good lessons. We don't have time to look at his 12 lessons about leading with humility, but I think your audience may well find it useful to read his a very short book that he wrote about humility.
Thank you for the advice and the lead. We're coming towards the end of the show now, and one question that I ask all my guests is about some of the things that they feel have contributed to their success. So if you can please share with us what have been some of your driving forces?
So, I think I come from we're very family orientated. As I said, I come from a big family, so family is very important. And so I think we were nurtured to be successful in different ways. I mean, if you look at the span of our family, we all in successful, but in very different ways. Some successful as mothers, some successful as professionals. And so I think family has always been very important. My faith also drives me. I think that I've been given lots of opportunities. I mean, it's been quite amazing. I'm landed in this job because of an opportunity. Somebody at the business school said, "You've got to interview today's fish." For the as a vice dean. So I never applied for the job. I mean, somebody sort of said to me, "Please, Dean, phone this person." And so I think For me, I have been given opportunities. I'm very grateful for the many, many opportunities that people, both as a child, my teacher, the colleagues who recruited me into the, and the constant opportunities that I get to grow in my position as vice dean.
But in that, it's recognizing you wouldn't have those opportunities if people didn't see your contributions and your outputs. So it's not just about opportunities, it was recognition of your value.
I think you're right. You're right. I mean, I think it, part of what I would like to advise people is to really speak up, speak out. I mean, people don't, if you're sitting quiet in a corner, we don't know you, you're invisible to us. And so it is, you know, network, speak to people, ask advice from both mentors, senior to you and junior to you. I've learned so much from staff junior to me. And so I think, you know, you've got to engage with others, speak to them, speak out.
And on that kind of advisory note, as we wrap up today's conversation, please can you share a few words of wisdom or inspiration or motivation that you'd like to pass on to girls and women who are listening to us?
So I think in throughout my life I've realized that you can't do anything on your own, and we are stronger together. And so one of the things that I always advise people is you've got to find your clan, and your clan could be a group of women, it could be a group of people in your workplace. Men and women, it doesn't only have to be women. You've got to find your clan because you have to have a group of people, your go-to people. I think you have to continually and build relationships. I mean, without relationships, we are dead in the water. And so I think if you always are mindful that sometimes you're fed up with people, something goes wrong, but you must think of the long-term relationship that you have with the system. And for in my case, the Department of Health is critical to our relationship. And I always advise my colleagues, even though we get mad at each other at times, especially when the austerity measures, maintain the relationship. And then finally, I think, and one of the things, I mean, Stellenbosch University has got its unique challenges as part of the past, but you have to be present to make the change. And so be present. You can throw stones from outside. And sometimes you've got to make that commitment that if you want to make a change, you have to be present within the system. And sometimes when you feel like enough is enough now, just think why you're here and that we really need to maintain our institutions, our health systems, our country for the next generation. So be present and make the change that really that you do want to see.
Great words of wisdom there. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity.
You have been listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, and we have been talking to Dr. Therese Fish, who is the Vice Dean of Clinical Services and Social Impact in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at Stellenbosch University.